I'm not pulling out of the driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for another drive to work at home edition. So I've been using my home time to talk with lots of cool people working at Wizards. And so today I have Jess Dunks, the Magic Rules Manager. Dun, dun, dun.
Hey, how's it going?
So, okay, so part of what one of the things I've been trying to do with these interviews is let people see there's a lot of moving pieces to Magic. And I spend a lot of time talking about a very narrow band of it. But I like people seeing other aspects. And so I think on paper, people somehow think that like the head designer and the rules manager are like adversaries. I mean, I've made jokes about that in the past, like when Tayback was the rules manager stuff. But really, look, we work together. We have the same end goals, which is let's make Magic awesome. And so I just want to sort of talk about what you do and like what it entails to make the rules work, because that is quite a heady task, more so than I think the audience has any idea.
Sure. Did you want me to just start talking about it and describe it, or
if you had to describe somebody in a couple minutes, what do you do? What job do you have? What exactly is your job?
Yeah, my job lives on the editing team for Magic. I work very heavily with designers and our digital partners, and we work together to make both the words on the cards work and the large comprehensive rules document that we have work. And we also put together rulings that you see on cards in the release notes and on Gatherer when you look at cards. The majority of my job is to make sure that the large machine that is the Magic rules continues to function properly as we make new cards that do new things and new rules have to be added to them.
Okay, so...
Go ahead.
Okay, so this is where you and I come into, you know, where our jobs interact is... It is my job and my team's job to do things we've never done before, because part of the fun of Magic is, hey, this latest set does a new thing and has a new mechanic or whatever. And so I often come to you to figure out, like, what am I, because I have to think downstream of me, what am I setting you up for? If we did this, what problems might it cause?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that conversation kind of continues. It involves many people, and it continues as we make new sets that do new things. And I actually, to be honest, I kind of like it. The newer the thing is, the easier it is to work with. If something is completely and totally new, it's much easier to decide how does this work. So for example, if we say, we look at dungeons from AFR, they were a completely new thing, where we got to kind of define the entire space around how they worked for that set. Whereas with something like Reconfigure, it's a new way of doing a thing that already existed, and that creates more issues for making sure that all of the old things still work the same way with the new things.
So what do you, when I come up to you say I have something new, what are you most afraid I will say?
That's a good question. I mean... Honestly, when you come up to me and say you have something new, I don't know if afraid is the right word. I guess I'm like, if you're asking me like what's the most difficult, the answer is going to be stuff that requires me to just rewrite whole sections of rules. So if you're saying I have something new. What is it? Well, we have this, we decided that we want to change how all of equipment work for all, you know, for all the pass cards. It's going to be very hard to do. But hey, we have this new way of doing things. It's going to be much easier to do. So my fear is going to be that you come up with an idea that requires us to change how a lot of pass magic works or kind of work around it. But I think a lot of people have this idea that like, I want to keep everything the same and don't want to do new things. And I actually really enjoy both seeing new ideas come to life and figuring out how the challenge and the puzzle of making them work in the rules. So I don't know if afraid is the right word. I actually enjoy working with you on new stuff.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that's really interesting is a lot of what I get from you is not don't do this. It's if you did it this way rather than that way, my life would be much easier.
Magic is very flexible. It is, and the Magic rule system, it's very intricate. There are a lot of moving parts, but it's actually, it's honestly fairly stable. The Magic rules, we could just crush it. My job is to make sure we don't. But as long as we're watching out for the parts that could cause problems as we make new cards, I want to do new and fun, exciting things. So I think there's a lot left that Magic, much stuff that Magic hasn't done yet that we can do that's going to be fun, exciting gameplay. So I know that you've in the past talked about the kind of like, oh, we can't do that thing. But no, I want to say yes, we can as much as possible.
Yeah, the interesting thing for our conversations is it really is never yes, you can or no, you can't. It usually is here's the cost or here's what doing it means. Here's the issues we have to solve. Like you give me, like the way I think of it is you're a resource and you're telling me what problems I'm making for people downstream, you being one of those people. But, you know, when I do this mechanic, what problems am I creating? And a lot of times you'll give me advice like, oh, here's a way you can get what you want that doesn't cause any problems or as many problems. That's a lot of the reason when you and I chat is sort of like, hey, early on, I have a lot of flexibility. There's a lot of ways I can do something. And so, okay, which path gets me to where I want to go? What's the cool mechanic? But also, you know, in a way that the system works. And, a lot of sort of our relationship, I think, is of, like, I actually have a decent understanding. I mean, not as well as you, but I understand generally how the rules work. And most importantly, I know the areas that cause problems. Like, I know where I've tried to do something in the past, and you or a previous rules manager are like, oh, we can't do that. In fact, I just did a podcast that people can listen to a week or two ago, where I talked about what I called the non-tournament design space, which is what, you know, Unsets, Acorn, like, for tournament rules to work, we can't do thing A, B, and C, but that's kind of fun, but that's why we make it, you know, in this space and not in on tournament cards. And, for example, one thing you brought up was how hard something is, and so the example I gave there, we can talk through a little bit. So, Last Strike, ironically, was created by Mark Gottlieb when he was the rules manager, but he had his designer hat on. And then when he put his rules manager hat on, he goes, oh, yeah, we can't make this. So I want to talk a little bit. Let's get into the rules. Why is Last Strike, which on the seems so easy, it seems so simple, like everybody can understand it. Why is it like, why is rewriting the rules so hard? Like, talk a little bit why that would be so hard to put into the rules.
Sure. Last Strike is a fantastic example of something that players can look at, immediately understand how it works, and they get it. But when you try to build it into the machinery of Magic, it could cause issues. When we look at First Strike and how First Strike is built into the Magic rules, and Double Strike alongside it, the rules, players tend to think of it in terms of, okay, well, here's my First Strike combat damage step, and here's my regular combat damage step. And then, obviously, following that, there's my Last Strike combat damage step. And that's very straightforward. But the rules don't actually look at it that way. The rules say if there's a creature with First Strike, then we have an additional combat damage step. And then the way it defines which creatures get to deal damage in each of those combat damage steps isn't creatures with First Strike do it here, creatures with Double Strike do it here. It has a long kind of flow chart of, okay, well, creatures with First Strike deal damage at this point. And then as we get into the next combat damage step, creatures that had First Strike in the last combat damage step and creatures with Double Strike now, and it's a long list of which creatures get to do this. If we add another combat damage step and add Last Strike after that, that basically blows that entire model up and we have to rebuild it from scratch because it wasn't, frankly, designed with the flexibility of adding more kinds of strikes when it was initially made. And the combat rules are way more complex than you would think, just than most players would think, frankly, of trying to play through Magic, which is why something like that works so well in a silverboarded set, like an Unset, but doesn't work particularly well in tournament play is because we have to be able to account for every single corner case. And there are some corner cases that just it wouldn't work with.
I have a metaphor that I like. This is a metaphor that people I've used in the past that has been very let's say I want to, I have a house and I want to do some remodeling. So if I bring in somebody who's, you know, an expert who's going to do the remodeling, and I say to them, I want to knock out that wall. He might say, oh, no problem. Sure. Yeah, we can knock out that wall. Or he might say, oh, no, no, that's a bearing wall. If we knock out that wall, the house collapses. So yes, I could do it, but it's a lot more work and it's going to cost you a lot more money because I have to account for the bearing. Like something's holding up the rest of the house. I can't just knock it down. Where, and somebody who's an expert, like, can know, like, understands where the bearing walls and where they aren't. And so you're sort of the expert here on the rules. You're like, oh, no, this is a bear. You can't just knock this rule out. This would cause infinite problems. Things are, you know, it's holding things up. And that's a lot of sort of what happens when you say, well, what about this? You can't just take something out because other things are dependent upon that to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a fantastic way of looking at it. I actually really like that metaphor because something like combat damage has a lot of those bearing walls you're talking about. But there are other places where you or another designer will come to me and say, hey, can we do this variant thing? And they expect a lot of resistance. And I'm like, yeah, that's easy. Let's do it. That's no problem.
I'm always taken aback, by the way, when I have like a really weird idea or something and you're like, yeah, sure. I'm like, oh, wow, I didn't think it'd be that easy.
And a lot of that comes down to kind of that metaphor you just built about the houses and the load bearing walls. You know, if we have to take something out and kind of rebuild that structure, that's a lot of work. But if it's just kind of a new thing entirely, if it's an addition to the house instead of taking out one of the rooms and making it look different, that's much easier to set up than old things. And a lot of the stuff that you come to me with is new stuff. You know, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's variations on old stuff. But you know, we want to make as many cool things as we can. So we should try to. My philosophy on it is we should try our best to make those things work. And I think it's where conversations like the one you and I had, you alluded to earlier, where I get to say, well, here's another way we could make that work, come in handy. Because I don't want to be the guy that just says yes or no to things. I want to say, that sounds fun. Let's see what we can do in that space.
Yeah, and usually the interesting thing about the conversations we have is it's a tactical, how do we tackle this problem? And it's like, hey, mm-hmm. I want to do something. And you're like, okay, well, you're like, and a lot of the conversations also are me explaining what it is I want to do. And sometimes you're like, oh, well, there is a way to do that, but not the way you're doing it. Here's a different way to do it. But we could get your goal, but not your means of doing it. Like, you know, maybe the way you're doing it's problematic, right. But there's a different way we could do it. And that's one of the interesting things to me is, like, a lot of times I'll come talk to you and I go back to my team. And then it's like, okay, here's the options we have available to us. And a lot of those conversations, like a lot of the conversations are more about, hey, if we do path A, here's the problems. If we do path B, here's the problems. And then try to figure out on our end, you know, what we want to explore. But like I said, the interesting thing to me about like having worked with, you know, I mean, my relationship with the Magic Rules is different than your relationship, but I have a long-standing relationship with it because part of having to make new things is I have to understand what's there. Like, for example, see if you can hear a little trivia quiz. What part of the rules, like, causes me, the designer, the most problems that I swear at the most? What is the part of the rules that, like, is the biggest problem from a design standpoint?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm actually not sure, but I'm interested in the answer. What do you think is the most problematic?
I would say layers.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Just so the audience understands, in order for things to happen, there has to be an order for things to happen, right? That the game has to understand in what order things go. So that is called layers, meaning, oh, first this happens, then that happens. Because in order for the system to work, and I always say to the audience, kind of think of like a computer program. Like there has to be exact answers. You can't be fuzzy. Like there has to be an exact answer for things. So in order for it to work, layers just says, look, this happens and that happens and that happens. So every once in a while, I invent something. I or one of my designers invent something. But the reason it can't work is, oh, the layers are wrong. That it won't happen mm-hmm. the way you want it to happen because of the way the layers play out. Which is a very invisible thing, mostly, to, you know.
So if you don't mind my digressing about it a little bit, one of the ways I like to explain layers as a concept is if you think of like clear paper that you use on like a projector to display something on a wall, you have, if you think, well, okay, effects that make things copies are on one of those clear things, and we put that on top, and that's a layer. And then effects that make things a different color is a different layer. And then effects that make things a bigger power and toughness is a different layer. And we stack those on top of each other. Those are the kind of how those layers of effects are viewed by the game and the game rules. We look at down at an object, like a permanent on the battlefield, after all of those things have been applied, and say, well, what does it look like right now after all these layers have been applied? And that's kind of how I think of layers working.
And so, I mean, just off the top of my head, like, let's say, for example, I wanted to make a card that said all flying creatures are blue. Is that I'm trying to think when I'm messing.
That doesn't work the way you want it to.
Right. So explain why all flying creatures are blue doesn't work.
Okay, so all flying creatures are blue. So all creatures with flying are blue is how an editor would put that.
Yeah.
The problem is that, as I mentioned, you have those. The game goes through layers, and it applies everything in one layer before it applies everything in the next layer. And so the layer where we determine what color things are happens before the layer where we decide what abilities something has. So all creatures with flying are blue would work okay for things that are printed with flying on them. That thing would become blue. But if we have something else that says that gives flying to a creature, because it's in a later layer, it's in layer 6 as opposed to layer 5, because it's in a later layer, then the game is looking at the color layer and says it needs to determine what should be blue. It doesn't know that thing's going to gain flying in the later layer, layer 6. It just sees the things that already have flying printed on them. And that sounds like a very straightforward thing to say, well, why do we need these layers? But I don't have the time in the podcast to really explain why all of those layers are necessary.
Yeah.
But because of the mechanics that we've built and the way that we've built the game of Magic, the layers actually are necessary, and they make things work intuitively most of the time. Unfortunately, they preclude some designs from being Magic cards, like the one that you just described. Because the game goes, well, what has flying? And it doesn't see things that are going to gain flying later on from other effects.
Yeah, here's another, I'm just pointing out some areas. To me, the audience might enjoy just areas that I know we can't make things because it causes rule problems. So another big area that this is connected to is things where it has to know what it will be, but it's not now. Like, for example, people always want to, like, make unwrathable creatures, right? Make creatures that, like, it'll know what's going to happen and prevent it, but, like, it only can prevent things that it knows at the time. It can't look ahead to things it doesn't know yet.
Yeah, so this is a pretty consistent issue that comes up in designs in various ways, is that the Magic game rules, by and large, are really, really good at looking into the past and seeing what has occurred already. But they're really, really bad at looking into the future and seeing what might occur when another event occurs. And this is largely because we have a very robust system of replacement effects, which are actually the thing I think is most frustrating about trying to fit together Magic rule stuff. These replacement effects look at an event and they say, what event is about to happen? Oh, okay, well, we're going to do something else instead. So a replacement effect might say, if you would gain 2 life, instead draw a card. And then the game goes, okay, so you're going to gain 2 life. Instead of gaining 2 life, we're going to have you draw a card. And then that event happens. That means that the event of gaining 2 life never actually occurred from the game's perspective. But that means that putting together effects that care about that is hard. So if I were to have an effect that said counter target spell that would cause you to gain life, that's harder to put together because the king can't know for sure if that's actually the event that will happen when this spell resolves. The game only knows what it will attempt to do, but doesn't know, like, if that's actually going to happen.
Yeah, the one of the things that's really interesting is a lot of times the problem isn't the rules can't handle it. mm-hmm. problem is what will happen isn't what the players think will happen. It's yep. non-intuitive. And that's usually, that's a big deal breaker for me, meaning when the rules will just won't work the way people expect them to work, well, then people will just play them wrong. Like, we try really, really hard on the design end. Like, intuition's important. I want people, I want the game, I mean, I'm sure it's important for you as well to make that happen. But, like, one of the things that really, like, one of the biggest problems I have with the rules is, it's, right, it's not that it doesn't work, it's, oh, that it doesn't do what you think it would do, and then I know the players would play it wrong, and they're just going to cause constant yeah. confusion, because, like, if things don't work intuitively, that's a huge problem. And you and I wrestle with that a lot of, well, here's what would happen. Like, I'll give a good example. I love power toughness switching. It's a fun effect. I love it. But love of God, it just doesn't do what you, like, the reason we really don't do it much anymore, if you notice, like, we'll do plus, you know, plus and minus and, or like, we'll do it in other ways, but we're very, very careful when we let you do it in very peculiar situations, because it just doesn't work the way you'll think it'll work in so many situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Power toughness switching is a fantastic example of things that don't work. But one of my favorite things about the conversations that we do have is exactly figuring out exactly how that's going to play out. When you say, here's a new mechanic I want to put together, and I get to say, okay, well, that mechanic means this weird thing might happen. Is that okay? And we go, oh, wait, well, maybe not. And then we figure out how we can kind of get around that problem. Because I agree with you, the game being intuitive is an integral part of it being fun to play. And we should keep it that way as much as possible.
Yeah, the funny thing is, if you tell me it doesn't work intuitively, I have issues, okay, we got to fix it because I don't want it to work non-intuitively. The area that's the biggest conflict areas between you and I think, is when it's a corner case that will never, in actual play, happen, but like the game system has to resolve it. And I'm like, that's never going to happen. Can we just have the fun part that's going to happen? You're like, no. The game has to know what's going to happen. And that's, like, for example, to be honest, there's a lot of uncards or just cards they try to make. And the reason they got stopped had nothing to do with people would get it. They'd understand it. It would work fine. It's just like, but the rules don't handle 99.9% really well.
Right. Yeah, there are a lot of cases, especially with those uncards, where the truth is it works just fine in the vast majority of circumstances. But the magic rules aren't built to have fuzziness. The magic rules are built, like you've mentioned, like a computer system. They have to get an input and then they have a result. And when something in the middle doesn't quite work right, it's like when you ask a calculator to divide by zero, it just stops functioning properly. So in a lot of those cases, I understand where we're coming from and why people want to, by designers specifically, want to make something work a certain way, and they're okay with it not working in the corner cases. But part of my job is to make sure that those corner cases actually do function properly, or at least have an answer, even if it's not an intuitive one.
Yeah, and like one of my things is I don't really, the non-intuitive corner case that like is a theoretical thing, I don't really care if it's non-intuitive. Like if it doesn't actually come up, if no one's actually going to happen, it's fine if people want to talk around and discuss the weirdness of it because it doesn't actually impact play. That's one of my pet peeves is like where I get stopped, not because of anything practical, but it's just because of like the higher system, you know.
I mean, that comes back down to that card you mentioned earlier where you want to give, all creatures, we make all creatures with flying blue. That's not a card anybody has trouble understanding. But because we've built to the system in a very specific way, that effect just doesn't work.
And that's, that. By the way, it's really hard for the audience. Whenever on my blog I say the rules didn't allow this, they get really upset. They're like the rules should allow anything. I'm like, well, one of the givens of the rules is we want consistency, right? We want, when something happens one way, it'll happen the same way in a different circumstance because the rules are too big for people to know them all. But the idea is if they can learn the generalities of how things work, then you have a working knowledge. Like most people can have a working knowledge of the rules and that, oh, in most cases, I can figure it out. If I understand these principles, I can understand how the game works. And yeah, there's always weird cases. And like one of the, I mean, I'm the silver border rule manager, so I do what you do on a smaller scale where people ask me weird questions all the time and I have to figure out, okay, how does that work? I get weirder questions probably more at a higher percentage than you do, although you get weird ones too, just because the questions are coming from more bizarre places. But I mean, one of the things that I've really learned is, I can sort of feel myself in your shoes, is when somebody's trying to ask something, I'm like, okay, I get what they're going. And then I'm like, oh, how is that supposed to work? And I want to be consistent, right? Like, we want to make sure that whatever we say, it works the same way when you're doing something else. And so it's...
Right.
The way I'm most in your shoes is someone asks me some sort of unquestion, I'm trying to solve it, and I often will talk to you, and I'm like, how would the normal rules handle this? Because, you know, I have an odd given that I'm saying is okay to have.
That's actually a really funny thing. Is that when I first got hired, I remember the first time you sent me a question about something related to uncards. I was just like, wait, what is this about? I don't understand what question I'm getting right now. And then I had to realize that what card we were talking about.
Yeah.
Because you asked me a question about something related to an uncard, but you didn't tell me that it was an uncard first.
And I
was
like, sure.
What is this text? I don't understand.
Yeah, I've learned. I have to like tell you the card I'm talking about, because sometimes I get in the weeds, right? Because we're trying to figure something out, yeah. And I'm trying to solve something, and it's about an uncard, but I get in the weeds, and then you don't know, because I also contact you a non-un thing, so like you don't know that I'm necessarily contacting you about un thing. So I've learned to be clear,
right.
when I talk to you.
Oh, I mean, it's hilarious in retrospect. It's just at that moment I was just like, did we print a card that does this? And then I realized we're talking about this uncard. I'm like, okay, well, we can build a consistent answer off of that. Here's how that would work if we did that in this other case. And then we get to an answer and it works great. That story from when I first got hired was funny to me.
Yeah, it is. I remember that on my end, that you were just very confused. And I'm like, oh, wait. Let me explain what's going on. I can see my desk, so I'm not too far from work. So I want to ask you this question before we wrap up for today, which is... What is the funnest part about being the Magic Rules Manager?
The funnest part about being Magic Rules Manager is that I get to interact with the Magic Rules in a way that really no other human gets to. When I was a Magic Judge before this, I was very involved in Magic Rules, making sure that they were enforced and the game worked correctly at a high level at Pro Tours and events such as that. But when I got this job as the Rules Manager, it really gave a new perspective on it, where I get to help develop a system that makes this incredibly fun game work properly. And we get to say, what do we want it to do? That's when somebody says, hey, can this work? And the answer is, well, maybe. What do we want it to do? Let's build rules that make that work. That's probably the most fun part of my job for me, is to say, yes, we could do this weird, crazy thing. Let's do it. And that's why I think that drives to the philosophy of just like, yeah, let's figure out how we can do it, as opposed to just saying, no, we can't do that.
Yeah, one of my my favorite things, I mean, just having worked on Magic for so long, is there's cards that I like that I'll be told we can't do, and then I just wait for the next rules manager and see, can they do this? And, like, for example, the card where you take over your opponent's turn.
Mindslaver.
I first pitched during Tempest. It was supposed to be Volras Helm. It ended up becoming, I mean, we changed the card. But I forget who the rules manager was at the time. But they were like, you know, taking over the opponent's turn, it cannot be done. And then, you know, when we were doing Mirrodin, we had a different rules manager. And so I presented again. He's like, wait a minute, I think we could do that, you know. And what I've learned working with rules managers is, like, different rules managers think slightly differently. And, you know, like, whenever we present a new problem, it's like, okay, it's a problem to solve. How do we solve that? And it's neat working with different rules managers, because each one has been a little bit different in how they think of things, you know. And so, I think it's neat, like, just interacting with lots of different rules managers, of something that for some person, like, that's impossible, it can't be done, to somebody else says, no, maybe we could do that, so.
Yeah, well, some of that comes from, and I know we're short on time, but some of that comes from the fact that as the game progresses and we get more rules and more mechanics, sometimes the game gets better at doing things. So when we introduced double-faced cards, for example, that opened up a whole new way of making cards that do fun things in the game. And then we have other things where you might ask a question where years ago the answer would be no, and now the answer is, actually, we've already built the foundation and framework for that with this other mechanic. We just build off of that and do something new. And that, I really enjoy that as well. So I hope we keep doing new things.
Right. I promise you we will keep doing new things. But so as a final note, I mean, one of the things that's fun, I mean, reason I wanted to have you on is just, I have a lot of fun working with you. You know, I know in the past I've made fun of sort of making an adversary relationship just because it's funny to, you know, like the rules manager and the head designer butting heads because it's funny. You know, Tayback and I used to play that up just because it was a fun story, I guess. But really, it's I mean, our job, and you do a lot of things beyond just like interacting with me. You know, in fact, I'm sure our interaction is a tiny, tiny portion of what you do. I force you to have to like reinvent things, but a lot of your job also is like fine tuning things, or we're doing something mm-hmm. we've done before, but there's one card that does something slightly different. You know, there's a lot of how do we make this one thing work rather than the whole system. Like you and I talk systems because usually I'm trying to do a whole new thing. But a lot of the rules is here's one card. How does this one card specifically have to work based on the systems and the rules and stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I've enjoyed all of our interactions. We've done a lot of stuff with making new things. I haven't worked with Wizards that long. So a lot of the stuff that we've worked on, we can't talk about yet, but I'm very excited for stuff that we've worked on together.
Yeah, I'll do a little teaser story before we wrap up for today. So when we decided that Unfinity was going to have some of it was going to be Acorn, some black bordered, I made a team to sort of figure out like what's where. And you were one of the people that I was on the team. It was me, you, Emma, and Tayback. Emma was there to talk about like constructed, you know, legacy play and stuff. And Tayback was the editor, and you obviously were the rules manager. And it was sort of like, can the game do this? Can the game do that? And it was a lot of fun. You would surprise me. Like, sometimes I was sure the game couldn't do it. You're like, no problem. Game can do that. And other times I'm sure it was easy to do. You're like, oh, yeah, that's a problem. So it was very interesting. It was a fun game internally. I was trying to figure out whether you thought, you know, you would say whether we could do it or not.
Yeah, I definitely remember surprising you with things. There were even cards that were so surprising to you that you asked me multiple times. You would ask me, and then later on, you were like, "I marked this one down as you said it was okay. Did you really say this is okay?"
So later this year, you guys. I mean, I think there'll be some cards that are not Acorn that will surprise people, and then vice versa. There'll be some cards that are Acorn. We're like, "Why in the world is Acorn?" And it's like, "Well, this is a little rule that you know." But anyway, maybe at some point I'll have you on once that thing is known. You and I can talk about why is this, and why is that, and we can talk through the nuance of what is and isn't doable.
I would love that. That sounds fantastic.
But anyway, I can see my desk, so we all know what that means. It means this is the end of my drive to work, so instead of talking magic, it's time for me to be making magic. So I want to thank you, Jess, for being with us. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for having me. I had a lot of fun.
And to all you, I will see you next time. Bye-bye.